Thank you so much for joining today. Again, this is the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program presentation of Distinguished Chair Awards. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am a Fulbright Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at the Institute of International Education. And I am pleased to be joined today by Dr. Martin Margala, who was a Fulbright Scholar in the Distinguished Chair Program to the Czech Republic in 2015 and 2016. He is a chair and professor of electrical engineering at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, and we will be hearing from him shortly in the presentation. Before we begin with the actual awards, I would like to take some time to talk to you a little bit about Fulbright itself. The mission of Fulbright is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. And we are very proud of this mission. We have partnerships with over 160 countries worldwide, and we offer opportunities for scholars like yourself to research, teach, or for students to study abroad. The Fulbright program is approaching its 75th anniversary. We are funded by the United States Department of State and administered by the Institute of International Education. This is the United States government's flagship international educational and cultural exchange program. Before we move further into the Fulbright program, I do want to talk a little bit about our view on diversity and inclusion. Fulbright strives to ensure that everyone in the United States has an opportunity to participate in the program regardless of the type of audience that you might consider yourself. If you are from an underrepresented audience, if you are a person with a disability from a particular race or geographical location, we strive to welcome all people into the Fulbright program. We do this not only by opening up our application and making sure that everyone who is eligible can apply, but also by actively recruiting people at historically black colleges and universities, minority-serving institutions, and Native institutions across the United States. Some of you on the webinar might be wondering why Fulbright is the right funding source for you. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what Fulbright can bring to you. The first and foremost, I want you to see that Fulbright really is transformational, and you'll hear all about this from our guest as we move on through the presentation. But what you are able to do is foster international relationships that are real and lasting. Many people say they continue throughout their entire career. Additionally, you're able to expand your publishing network into an international realm, and that is a really wonderful way, again, of keeping those collaborations going. Fulbright also allows you to be more multicultural in the classroom. Scholars find that once they return from their Fulbright experience, they have a new perspective that they can then share with their students. You also then become the ambassador for international exchange on your campus. Once people hear that you participated in a Fulbright program, they have a lot more questions about international exchange, and you can really work to promote this amongst your students and your colleagues. The next thing is that if you become a Fulbright scholar, you will gain this professional recognition that stays with you throughout your entire career. You become part of this network, and when you meet other Fulbright scholars, you instantly have that experience in common. And you will join this vibrant alumni network that stays together even after the Fulbright experience is over. The next thing that makes Fulbright really special is that it's family friendly. Approximately 60% of our awards provide dependent support. Just so that you know, dependent support usually comes in the form of possibly an additional air ticket, a small stipend increase for your family members, possibly an increase in the housing allowance, or it sometimes also comes in the form of K through 12 tuition reimbursement for international schools if you're bringing dependent children. And many Fulbrighters who do go overseas with dependents say that their dependents go on to have international careers, and I think that's a really exciting impact of the program. And then finally, Fulbright is just a very supportive program overall. You have alumni like Dr. Margalla today who will be sharing experiences, and then you also have domestic and in-country staff who help you with all of the logistics. So Fulbright is really a wonderful way to teach or conduct research overseas and have an experience that will last throughout your career. A little bit about Fulbright by the numbers. The Fulbright program funds over 8,000 awards annually. This is a really large number that we're very proud of. And as you can see at the very top of the list, about 800 of those opportunities go to U.S. scholars and administrators. To date, we have about 390,000 Fulbrighters who have participated in the program since its inception in 1946. A little bit about the distribution of awards. As you'll see when we review the awards today, there are many Fulbright awards that allow different activities. Some allow research only, some allow teaching only, and some ask for a combination of teaching and research. And if you look at this chart, this just happens to be the preferences of the grantees from 2018 and 19. This is not a strict breakdown of the awards that are going to be the most popular or the most funded. It really just has to do with the preferences of the applicants, because we do like to make sure that if you're applying for a Fulbright, you can have your Fulbright match some of your own goals and desires for your activity. To be eligible for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, first and foremost, most you do need U.S. citizenship. Unfortunately, permanent residents are not eligible. And then apart from that, you need to have the different degree or experience as required by the award. And for the awards today, most of them require a PhD and a substantial amount of experience in academia. Looking at a Fulbright that works for you, today we are going to focus specifically on the Distinguished Chair Awards. And there are 46 distinct opportunities that are labeled Distinguished Chair. And these are the awards that we consider to be the most elite in our awards catalog. There are also other awards, whether you are working with postdocs yourself and you might have students you'd like to refer to Fulbright, colleagues who are early to mid-career, or even if you are approaching retirement, you still have opportunities throughout Fulbright. Okay, now I would like to take the time to turn over the microphone to Dr. Martin Margalla, who is a Fulbright Distinguished Chair at Czech Technical University in Prague. He conducted a teaching and research activity on novel science and education in future electronics. So, Dr. Margalla, I'll turn it over to you to say a few words to the audience and share a little bit about your Fulbright experience and the impact that it had on you, your host, and your career.
Thank you very much, Carlene. And thank you to all that are in attendance. I see there are 42, including myself, attending, so that is very healthy number. I am Martin Margalla. I'm the department chair and a professor at the University of Massachusetts in Lowell, and I was in 2015-16 Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Electrical Engineering. My host institution, as you see, was Czech Technical University in Prague. Few minutes, I'll just try to summarize my experience. But I can tell you right off the bat that this experience, I spent 1 year in Czech Republic, and it had a profound change on not me personally, my professional life, but also on my family. And so I selected as a teaching and research. And so what that meant is that I was teaching one course each semester, one undergrad in the fall and graduate course in the spring semester. In addition to that, I was also asked by my host to develop a comprehensive program on academic writing and presentation for PhD students and postdocs and junior faculty. And so there are actually YouTube videos still posted, the series of lectures that we did in the spring semester. And as a result of this, one program, that program became so successful. When we opened it up, we had immediately close to 100 participants, students. So we had to run multiple sections, and then there was such a high demand that the university actually applied for a European Union grant to teach this course in the entire Prague region for all the universities in the Prague region, and it's still going on to this day. I can tell you that the distinguished chair role is quite different than the standard scholar. You are looked at as kind of a leader that is representing the best of American education. And I saw that as my role because from the beginning, the host institution and the dean of one of the colleges at Czech Technical University, the Electric Engineering College, was my main contact, my main host, and basically they gave me complete freedom. They wanted me to bring the best practices of U.S. education system, not only from in teaching and assessment, but also developing research programs, best practices in administration. And I was basically shadowing this dean. He was taking me to every meeting he had to go to and then ask me to comment how, poorly or how well the meeting was run and how much time it was wasted and what improvements can be done to organize these meetings. And I also was asked to revive their student organizations, especially because I'm in electrical engineering, so our main professional organization is IEEE, which stands for Institute of Electronics and Electrical Engineers. And I worked with the student group, student branch, that was kind of dormant, to rebuild it, and I actually connected our own student branch at home with them to share, what kind of programs they developed, and so on. Furthermore, because of this was the first year in 2015 that the Czech Fulbright Commission basically had the distinguished chair position approved. So I was the first one. And it was also the position was seen also from the U.S. Embassy as I was looked at as a person who basically represented the American education system, and I was the liaison kind of between the Czech university and the Czech academia and the U.S. Embassy. So I worked very closely with the cultural attaché at the embassy, who was responsible for the education as well, and they were very interested to support different initiatives in STEM, and so I was helping the embassy to promote among the Czech universities new programs. Such as women leaders in engineering, entrepreneurship, and innovation in academic system. We ran another workshop on technology transfer, and so on. So numerous activities over that year. And I learned, I became essentially a kind of an extended member of the embassy staff. That's how it felt. I was there, every week for meetings, basically played also this liaison role. I was also helping to, as I mentioned, to establish new research initiatives and actually bring research, U.S. research funding agencies to Czech Republic. And so I work very closely with the local funding agency, sort of the science, National Science Foundation equivalent. And during the time I was there, towards the end, actually, there was a memorandum was signed between National Science Foundation and the Czech counterpart on mutual funding opportunities for joint projects. And so now, since then, every several years, there is a call for joint projects. I also worked with the Office of Naval Research, that their global affairs division that was interested to tap into the research opportunities in Czech Republic. And so we were working on several programs to bring different research groups to and connect them with the U.S. Research counterparts. So it was a very, very busy year for me, profoundly life-changing, because I kind of stepped out of my sort of a personal shell and of being a department chair, so kind of the administrator role, very, very focused on a department level and doing my own research and working with my own students and teaching classes, to really started to be involved in these sort of STEM initiatives to help a much broader community beyond our own department. And so I always felt I represent myself and my own sort of professional interests, but more profoundly, I represent the department and the university and actually the entire, kind of academic, U.S. academic world, if we can make a change in that region, then that's how I felt that was my role. And I there are a number of programs that we established at the time that are still running. And we have a very close partnership with the Czech Technical University in not just the basic student exchange, but also in faculty exchange. We tech transfer office exchanges. It's very, very broad, different aspects that we really work fairly closely with each other. And so, the 1 year is a significant enough time that you are able to achieve a lot of things, to either complete conclusion, or you can start new initiatives and you take them as far enough that they will be materialized.
Thank you so much for your sharing. I apologize. I do want to make sure to highlight some of the awards, but we are going to have time for the questions and answers to continue to talk with Dr. Margalla about his experiences as a distinguished chair. And I do want to let you know, if you're putting questions in the question box, if there are some specifically related to Dr. Margalla, you can indicate that, and we will make sure to ask those questions during the Q&A.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. What I would like to do now is take you on a little tour around the world. As you'll see, Distinguished Chair Awards are not offered in every world region, but they are in many world regions. We had a question come in about whether the scholars themselves can initiate a Distinguished Chair Award, and unfortunately, you cannot. You have to apply for the ones that are posted in the awards catalog. So what I'd like to do is start with Australia. Australia is a very unique country that wants either distinguished chairs or postdocs, and there are a few other awards in between, but they're really very established in their program for distinguished chairs. So I'd like to start off with the first award, the Distinguished Chair in Advanced Defense Science and Technology, DST. This is an award that is looking for long-term STEM collaborators, but they also include collaborators in public health and medical sciences in this particular award. The areas of interest, some of them include quantum computing, anything related to cybersecurity, space, and surveillance. But if you go into the award description, you can see some of their priorities listed there. The next award is the Distinguished Chair in Applied Public Policy Award. And they are Flinders University and Carnegie Mellon University, Australia, are open to scholars in a variety of disciplines as long as it is connected to public policy issues that are related to democratic resilience. So they're looking for scholars who can look at public policy issues on an international and a national level. Moving on to the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at the Australian National University. This is an award that wants to pursue linkages between the home institution and Australian National University. So as you heard Dr. Margolla talk about, he was able to continue some of those connections once he returned to the University of Massachusetts Lowell and keep them alive. And this is another request for this particular award. The next award at RMIT University in Melbourne, Victoria, is a Distinguished Chair in Entrepreneurship and Innovation. The great thing about this is that you can actually come at these topics of entrepreneurship and innovation from a wide variety of disciplines, so you would want to look at the award description to see if your angle on entrepreneurship and innovation fits within the discipline requests for this award. Next, the University of Newcastle has an award in a Distinguished Chair Award in multiple disciplines. The disciplines are more connected to the STEM fields, but they also include social work. The priority areas for the University of Newcastle are primarily health-related, and so it's things like healthy lungs, reproductive science, cancer research, mental health research, among others. So if you are working in a health-related field, you might want to look carefully at the award at the University of Newcastle. The next award is the Distinguished Chair in Science, Technology, and Innovation. This is also looking for STEM-related scholars, and in particular, they're looking for people who do mineral resources, food and agriculture, space science, land and water-related research, among other things. Now, a note on the awards to Australia. These awards are all one-semester awards. They start in either January or February of 2022 for this current competition, so it's about a year and a half from now. And on the project statement for these awards, Australia is unique in that they ask you to take the last half to one page to write a personal statement that goes above and beyond your research and just explains who you are as a person. So please carefully review the award description because you are required to have that personal statement in the project statement to the Australia Awards. Additionally, in Australia, the one thing that is really nice about these awards is that you, if you're shortlisted, you do get a Skype interview. So again, it's yet one more opportunity for the Australia Commission to get to know you, who you are, and the type of work that you would bring to Australia. The last award in the East Asia and Pacific region that is in the Distinguished Chair category is the Distinguished Lectureship at Yonsei University. So Yonsei University is one of the most prestigious universities in South Korea. This is a teaching-only award that can be one or two semesters, depending on your preference, and it is open to scholars in all disciplines. And so if you want to go interact with students from another country and work in their institution, this is a wonderful opportunity to be at this prestigious university. Now I'm going to move on to Europe and Eurasia. I do want to let you know that the bulk of the Distinguished Chair Awards, including the one that Dr. Margolla had, are in Europe and Eurasia. In fact, we have 31 distinct Distinguished Chair Awards to Europe and Eurasia. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the awards. For example, the one to Austria, the Fulbright Catherine and Craig Hall Distinguished Chair Award for Entrepreneurship. It is at Vienna University of Economics and Business. This is a one-semester teaching and research award, and they're looking at for people in business, economics, and public administration. For example, women's entrepreneurship, small business development, management, marketing, among other things, but related to the field of entrepreneurship. Moving along to France, we have the Fulbright Tocqueville Distinguished Chair Award in all disciplines. And this award in particular in France is hoping to find scholars who would like to develop collaborative research projects and build lasting ties between a university in France and the home university. This can actually take place at any French public university, so you have flexibility in your location, and that's especially helpful if you have colleagues who are working at French institutions. Moving on to Russia, there is a Distinguished Chair Award in Sustainable Development. This is a teaching-only award that is 1 to 2 semesters, and the award is for economics, law, political science, urban planning, and other areas of interest. So you might want to look specifically at that, but they are trying to find a way to look at sustainable development from a variety of different angles. Moving on to Iceland. Iceland is a Fulbright National Science Foundation Distinguished Chair in Cybersecurity and Computer Science. This award is quite unique because it is co-sponsored by the National Science Foundation. It is for either teaching or teaching and research. It needs to take place throughout one academic year, but they do have the flex option where you could actually take 2 trips back throughout one academic year if this fit in better with your schedule. So they also are looking at cybersecurity from a wide variety of angles. So you could be in the field of communications, computer science, economics, education, engineering, information systems, political science, or public administration, and still be eligible for this award as long as you're looking at cybersecurity from the focus of your discipline. Moving on to Finland. Finland has a 9-month award, the Fulbright Bicentennial Chair in American Studies. This is at the University of Helsinki in the North American Studies program, and they are looking for people who study the United States, either from a race perspective, ethnicity perspective, film studies, Native American studies, popular culture, architecture, et cetera, et cetera. So if your research is focused on American studies in a wide variety of disciplines, you will want to look at this award to Finland. And then the last award I'm highlighting here is what we call a multi-country award, but it's actually the Fulbright Schumann Chair at the European University Institute in Florence, Italy. So it is one of our flagship EU Affairs awards. You will be in Florence, but we're looking for people who study US-EU relations and do security studies in the fields of economics, history, law, political science, and sociology. I do want to let you know that, again, we are only highlighting a few awards to Europe. There are many more that will be linked up when this webinar is archived. Moving on to South and Central Asia, we have one award in South and Central Asia. This is the Fulbright Nehru Distinguished Chair Award in all disciplines. So you really can apply in any discipline. It is for teaching and teaching research. I wanted to point out that this award is a one-semester award. And sometimes as you're exploring the Distinguished Chair Awards, if you have a need to be in a country longer, you may consider looking at some of the General Scholar Awards as opposed to the Distinguished Chair Awards that might give you a little more flexibility in your time. But overall, the Distinguished Chair Awards are the most prestigious, and this particular one to India allows you to stay for 4 months to either teach or do a teaching research project. The final world region that has Distinguished Chair Awards in our catalog is the Western Hemisphere, and we have 7 Distinguished Chair Awards in the Western Hemisphere. I'm going to start by highlighting 3 from Brazil. First is the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in International Relations at the University of Sao Paulo. The theme of this award is the political economy of international trade, challenges and new developments. And they are looking in particular for people who specialize in international trade, maybe the World Trade Organization, or corruption in trade, among other things. So people in economics, law, political science, and sociology. The Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Public Policy at the Joaquim Nabuco Foundation, this is also looking for people in education, political science, public and administration, and sociology. They're looking for people who can talk about and work with sustainable and territorial development. So again, a public policy focus on this particular award. And then the third award I'm highlighting to Brazil is the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in the Study of the United States. It is at the Federal University of Minas Gerais. It's a teaching research award. And the focus of this award is international law and U.S. economics. That's the, so international relations, economics, law. But also if you study American literature or political science, you're eligible for that award. Moving on to Canada, the Canada Fulbright Distinguished Chair Research Chairs at Carleton University. These are 9-month awards, and they're in a wide variety of categories. So there's one award for the arts and social sciences, another for entrepreneurship, another for environmental sciences, public affairs of North America, and then the School of Teaching and Learning. So this is a very flexible award for people in a wide variety of disciplines to go and research in Canada. And then finally, the award to Colombia is the Fulbright Universidad Nacional de Colombia Distinguished Chair in Biodiversity and Sustainable Development. You can either conduct a research grant or a teaching research grant. And the focus of this is biodiversity and sustainability, as you can see from the title right there. So when you are looking at these Distinguished Chair Awards, I always like to point out that there are 4 distinct tabs, and there is critical information behind every tab. The first tab, the Award Details tab, lists the institution you can affiliate with, the length of time, the start, maybe the start and the end date, and all of the preferences that the country has for this particular award. The Award Requirements tab is the one that talks about the requirements they have for you as a scholar, either language requirements or sometimes a particular rank, a rank in your university, so for example, full professor or associate professor. I do want to point out for award requirements, generally you do not need to be a chair at your home institution to apply for a Distinguished Chair Award. They're looking generally for senior scholars, associate or full professors for most of these awards. So even if you're not serving as a chair, you still are eligible for most of these awards. And then the third tab, the Stipend and Benefits tab, is where you will find the amount of money for your stipend. The stipend amount is intended to cover your transportation and your costs while you are residing abroad in your home country. So many faculty members combine a Fulbright award with their sabbatical, and that makes up their entire package as they're teaching or conducting research abroad. And then finally, you have the country and award area overview on the last tab. The application components. What you need to do is fill out an application form, and then you have a project statement, a CV or resume, and if you are applying for your Distinguished Chair Award, then the CV or resume can actually be up to 8 pages. For the other awards, it's 6 pages. You need 2 letters of recommendation, and then sometimes you need a language proficiency report if it's required, or a letter of invitation if it's required. And then the supplemental materials you need are either course outlines or syllabi for any award that includes teaching. And I do want to tell you that it's perfectly acceptable to upload course outlines or syllabi from courses that you currently teach. You do not need to prepare a whole new course for your application. The reviewers just need to see examples of how you organize a course, maybe how you assign different projects in your class so they can see overall what you are or who you are as a teacher. The next thing you need for any award that has a research component is a bibliography, which is basically situating your research project in the larger realm of scholarship. And then if you're applying in a creative field, you would need a portfolio submission. The project statement, it is a 3 to 5 page proposal where you focus on what you plan to do, the courses you plan to teach, and the goals of your research, your methods, and then also the anticipated impact of the award on your hosts and your home institution. And new this year, we actually have some supplemental questions that allow you to talk about why Fulbright is the best source for you, the funding source for you, why this country that you're applying to, and how adaptable you are. For example, how well do you deal with challenging situations? And then in the case that you're applying for an award that includes teaching, how will you adapt your materials for the host culture? In some of the awards, you are required to have a letter of invitation, and I'd like to just briefly mention that these are non-binding expressions of interest from the proposed hosts abroad. They should come from the person with whom you are collaborating, though some institutions have to have them written by the dean or the chair, depending on what the structure is in the country you're applying to. And then finally, it should come on host institution letterhead. But please know if there's a specific award to a specific university and a specific department, that department is allowed to issue multiple letters of invitation to different scholars who are seeking out invitations to apply. So it is a non-binding expression of interest. Okay, with that being said, I would like to open up the questions box so that I can start answering some of your questions right here. And I thank you for chatting them in, and I'd like to encourage you to keep chatting them in. Okay, there is a question that says, can you apply for a distinguished chair in one country and a standard award in another country? And the answer to this question is that you are only able to apply to one award per competition. So you would want to select the award that is the best award for you. So you would want to find out where you feel like you can contribute and what you can do through that that award that would be the best fit. So again, you do want to take the time to apply to the award that seems like you're going to be the most competitive, primarily because they're asking for something that you also have to offer. So if you're an economist, you might apply for an award that is really seeking economists. Okay, so then there's another question. It's actually a really great question. What should be the commitment of the host institute in terms of support, financial, lodging, or other? The answer to this question depends on the award to which you're applying. In most cases, the host institution is only responsible for general hospitality. Maybe they'll provide you with office space. They might provide you with access to the university library or maybe a host that you can ask questions to as you're there. Other awards, for example, some of the awards to Israel, do ask that the host institution makes a $2,000 financial contribution, but if that is the case, it would be clearly outlined in the award description. So if you have any questions, you can contact us directly about this. Okay, so someone also asked, you mentioned 46 Distinguished Chair Awards. Does this number change every year? Are the ones you mentioned offered every year? I can tell you that about 90% of the awards catalog stays the same year to year, but there's no guarantee about an award staying through to the subsequent year. Most of them do, but not all of them do. And so you would need to look at the awards catalog every year to see if there are new awards that are offered or if the old awards are still there. Okay, the next question, this one is for you, Dr. Margalla. If you can just unmute yourself, someone is asking, what is it like bringing a family on a Fulbright? If you could answer that question, please.
Sure. That is a very valid and very good question. So at the time, I can tell you my personal situation was Our son was in high school. He was a sophomore in high school, and our daughter was finishing middle school. And so I couldn't bring the entire family with me for 1 year, but our son, and he was very intrigued to treat this Fulbright as a kind of study abroad experience for him. And he was actually more convinced by his own high school to do this. The dean at his high school was very supportive to go with me. He actually ended up, staying in Czech Republic and finishing the high school, the international high school there, and graduating there. He liked it so much it completely changed, profoundly changed him. And he ended up going to college and studying global affairs. So that's how impacted him personally. But it is there are a lot of logistical nuances that you have to take care of when you take family members, and I got great help from the local Fulbright Commission in that regard. And I'm talking about housing for a year, insurances, finding a doctor. Transit passes and so on and so on. The list is pretty substantial. But I had great support, and they helped me to basically find and send me to all the right offices. And so it was fairly straightforward. So it was a great experience. For our younger daughter, a slight suggestion of taking her from her circle of friends when somebody is, in their seventh grade was so traumatic that we didn't even try it. So we ended up being two family members overseas and two family members stayed back home.
Thank you so much for sharing that experience. I have another comment from Rosemary O'Leary, who is one of the attendees, who said that she brought her daughter twice on Fulbrights, and today she calls herself an international girl. And that's a really great testament to the fact that it can have an impact on the children as well. But I appreciate your going through the decision, Dr. Margalla, about bringing and not bringing your children at different situations. Okay, there's another question about tips of procuring a letter of invitation. Okay, so let me go through that just for a moment. Okay, I'm going to switch screens here, so bear with me while I switch screens. Okay, so now I hope that you can see the, no one can see your screen, hold on, click two. Okay. Now you can see my screen. So this right here is the main web page for the Fulbright program, the CIES.org web page. And I'd like to point out on the very first page there is a Fulbright Scholar Directory. And I think that this is the best way to actually start to procure a letter of invitation. And so if you are applying to a particular country and you click on that Advanced Filters tab, you can put program country, for example, I'm going to do the Czech Republic because that's one that we've been talking about that has a Distinguished Chair Award, and you search. You actually get a list of all of the U.S. scholars and then the visiting scholars who were at or affiliated with the Czech Republic. They either went to or came from the Czech Republic. And so if you have a particular specialty, for example, history, and you're interested in this university, you might consider reaching out to this scholar to see if that person has any contacts they might be able to refer you to. The same thing if you're looking at the Czech Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Organic Chemistry, you could actually reach out to this visiting scholar who is from that university and see if they might be interested in collaborating with you. And if you click on this link right here, you see the name and the institution of the visiting scholar, but you also see their faculty contact, in this case at UCLA. And so if you can't find the contact information of this particular Czech scholar, you always could reach out to this U.S. scholar and see if they can help put you in touch with this particular scholar. So in my opinion, the best way to secure the letters of invitation are to actually go to that scholar database and search for people who have been at that same institution before. Thank you for asking that question. There's another question about, it says for the Yonsei University Award. This is the award to Korea. It says full professor. If you are an associate professor emeritus, unfortunately, if you only had the associate professor as your highest rank, you are not eligible to apply for that particular award. But there are many other awards that welcome emeriti professors. Just for that particular one, to Yonsei University, they're looking for something very specific, a full professor who wants to go and teach at Yonsei University. I got another question that asked if the acceptance rate was any different between the Distinguished Chair Awards and the Scholar Awards. And I want to tell you that the acceptance rate for all of the awards really does depend on the number of applications that are submitted each year. That changes year to year, so we do not give out application numbers. But I can tell you that the most competitive applicants are the ones who are trying to match their own skills up with what the award is looking for. There's another question that says, are applicants expected to have won academic awards or prizes? I do want to let you know that the review criteria are clearly posted on our website, and I would like you to go look at that. It really differs depending on the award and what it is that you want to do on the award. So they look at your academic portfolio, the way that you're presenting it, very holistically, and they use the review criteria that are posted on the website to actually review the awards. And so I would encourage you to look at that. As long as you can show that you are qualified, whether you have awards or don't have awards, then that is one of the key review criteria that you would need to demonstrate. Okay, someone wants to know a little bit more about the EU Florence Award. So that award, I think my recommendation, not only to the person asking about this, but to any of the, hold on, let me go, any of the scholars who are looking at awards, is when you have questions about a specific award, because I don't have the time to go into the details about all of the awards right here, I'm going to look it up, and I want to show you in the website, give me one second over here. This one, oh, I apologize, I pulled up the wrong one, but rather than going back and finding the Distinguished Chair Award, I wanted to point out to you that this link right here, Join an Office Hour, is the best way to learn more about the individual awards. If you click on Join an Office Hour, you can see that it's broken down by world region. And so if you're interested in learning more about the EU award, then I would encourage you to join the Europe and Your Asia Office Hours. They're offered every Monday from 4 to 5. And so it's consistently 4 to 5 on Monday. And that's going to be the best way to learn and ask specific questions about awards that you're interested in. Okay, let me keep going through the questions here so that we have a few more. And again, if you have questions for Dr. Margolla, it says, Dr. Margolla, here's another question. Do you have an idea of what life may be like for grantees without family members?
Absolutely. So one very sort of profound experience as well is that I got to meet and really become long-lasting friends with the entire cohort of Fulbright during that year, the Fulbright awardees in Czech Republic. And there were about 50 of us, and in the Prague region itself, about a dozen. And we basically became the best friends and are still very much in touch with each other. There were people who were studying, actually, you know, if you do a search for the Czech Republic from 2015-16 year, you will see all of them there. You know, they were studying a different variety of disciplines, and we really, you know, became a very close friend. So that was my kind of a close family while I was there. Even though my son was there, but it's he developed his own circle of friends at his new high school. Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely not, by yourself, somewhere, depressed and lonely. It's the cohort of friends that you will be meeting and interacting with will really have an impact.
Thank you so much. And another question, since I have you on the line here, Dr. Margalla, is a question came in. I have a 40-page CV. How do I cut it down to 8 pages? What should we emphasize? And I'm just curious because I'm sure you went through that same activity when you were applying yourself. Do you have any tips on how to cut down the CV? And then I can follow up with a couple other suggestions.
Yes. So, print only first 6. The probably you have to select. People don't need to see your entire life, but it's really those parts, those experiences that you have that are the most relevant and will have the most impact for your host country or the host institution. And typically it is because they are looking for distinguished chair is for really more senior people. That's typically the experience over the last 5 years probably is the most relevant.
Thank you so much. And the other thing that I do want to point out is if you do have an extensive publication list, you could also narrow it down 58 publications, including the following select 10, and then highlight some of the publications that are connected directly to your project. So if you are applying for a research award, you would want to make sure that your research is clearly identified in your CV. If you're applying for a teaching award, you would want to highlight, of course, your teaching accomplishments. And if you are applying for a dual award, you would want to at least make sure that both of those aspects are listed on your CV. Okay, another application question that I have right here is, I have 2 letters of invitation from 2 universities in the same country. How should I proceed? This question is a little bit difficult to answer unless I have some more context. And so I'm going to give you a basic answer, and if you need more context, I would encourage you to please join office hours. Some countries will allow you to split your time between 2 different host institutions. So you might be 50% time at Institution A and 50% at Institution B. As long as both of the invitations state that they are aware of this joint appointment that you're proposing for your Fulbright, usually you can submit both letters of invitation with that proposal outlined in both letters. But that's not allowed in every single country. So you would probably want to reach out to see if that's the case in the country that you are proposing to work in. If not, then you should select one letter and write your application to one particular host institution. What you want is to make sure that they can see that you're committed to working on a project and you have a plan in place, whether that includes one institution or 2 institutions. There's another question about the commitment for Fulbright Awards. In fact, someone said, do I have to go for a full year? Most of the awards that I highlighted today are one semester awards, with the exception of Finland, which is a one-year award. But some of the others, like Russia and the Schumann Award in EU Affairs, those can be either one or two semesters. And some of them allow you to use the flex option, which is to make multiple shorter trips over 1 or 2 years, depending on how it's defined in the award description. So to answer your question, no, you do not need a one-year commitment. Your commitment can be as small as a couple months, and it can be as long as an academic year. Okay. The next question that I have has to do with the pandemic. Are there any changes in selecting a country? And I know that that is a concern for everyone right now. We do want to make sure to take care of our health and well-being. And I want you to know that currently we are proceeding with the applications for the 2021-2022 academic year as planned, in hopes that in 1 year everything will be smooth. We do follow all of the Department of State guidelines to make sure that our scholars are safe, and if there is the pandemic, we would get them home, which is what we had to do in the spring. And so we are adjusting to the situation as it emerges or as it continues to develop, but please know that we do communicate with our grantees very clearly, and we let them know what decisions have been made as soon as we receive guidance from the Department of State. So your interest is the most important thing to us in the Fulbright program. Okay, there's one other question. It says, for alternative awards consideration. Okay, so in the application, you apply to one country to one award, but there is a section to see if you would like to be considered for alternative awards. Please indicate alternative countries if you would like to be considered for them, but I do want to point out that this alternative award is not driven by the applicants themselves. It is driven by the country who is looking for a scholar. So let's say a country really wanted scholars in the STEM field, and they listed the award as STEM, but they got primarily social science awards. They might try to seek out a STEM scholar from another country. So again, it would be driven by the country and not the scholars themselves. So I would like to encourage you not to spend too much time worrying about that one, because it will be you will be approached if there is an award that seems to fit your preferences. We're getting towards the end of our time, so I'd like to just take one moment to thank Dr. Margalla, and if you would like to share any final remarks in the last minute of our presentation, please feel free to do so, so that we can encourage the attendees today to consider Fulbright as an option for them and their career.
Oh, yes, thank you. Absolutely. Yeah, I would like to encourage all of you to seek, when you are in your career, in sort of a mid-career towards a senior, this two distinguished chair program really will have a profound positive impact on the future opportunities. And I can tell you, I'm 5 years since I went to this really on this adventure, and I really became an expert in many aspects of higher education than I was not exposed before. So I encourage you, all of you, to really consider, give it a strong consideration. And if you have any questions or would like to know anything about my experience, then please do not hesitate to reach out. I'll be more than happy to tell you how I organized, had to organize things back home and also at the host country and host institution in order to successfully finish that program. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much again for joining us. And for audience members, I want to encourage you to keep in touch with us. Here's some contact information in particular. You can email scholars@iie.org with any questions or reach out to the contact person whose name is listed in the award description of the award that you're considering. Thank you again, and I hope you all have a great day. Be safe and be well. Goodbye.